Yeah, I definitely get that. Usually, I go to a bunch of, especially I'm here based in Silicon Valley, and people say, "So what do you do? What's your startup?" And they kind of just, when I tell them, they kind of just like for a second stop and look at, and then they're like, wait, there's nothing out there already?"
Barefoot innovation starts right now.
Today we have a very special show because I realized, a bit belatedly, that we should do an episode on the CFSI Financial Solutions Lab competition. Our regular listeners know I'm on the board of CFSI, the Center for Financial Services Innovation, and we have an annual competition for innovative solutions for consumers. As I say, this is the second year of it, and our application period is about to close. It closes April 7th, which is a few days from now. So we have sort of rushed this show into production to share it with you, to encourage people to apply, and to let your friends know about it if you think they might have a fintech solution that would want to be in the competition. My guests are Ryan Falvey, who heads the lab, as well as four of last year's nine winners. They are Sherry Atwood of SupportPay, Jerry Nimmeren of Lend Street, and Quinton Farmer of Even. They are going to explain how the competition works, what they're looking for this year, and also speak from the standpoint of last year's winners about what they've gotten from participating in the program. So let's listen to them.
I am absolutely thrilled today to have a very special episode because our guests are from the CFSI Financial Solutions Lab. Our regular listeners have heard me talk about CFSI, the Center for Financial Services Innovation. I think practically every episode, something about CFSI comes up. I'm on its board. I feel like CFSI is doing really arguably the most interesting work anywhere in fintech and financial innovation, especially on financial inclusion. And we have had as past guests several other people. We've had the CEO of CFSI, Jennifer Tesher, and then we had two other members of the first year's labs competition winner group. In the past also, we had a talk with Steve Carlson from Ascend and also Ethan Block from Digit are both people who won in the first year of competition with the labs. So today, I'm going to introduce in just a moment Ryan Falvey, who runs the CFSI Labs, is going to explain how it works, and also Sherry Atwood of SupportPay, Jerry Nimmeren from Lend Street, and Quinton Farmer from Even. And so let me start, Ryan, by asking you if you would introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about you, tell us about the labs, and then we'll look forward to the rest of the conversation.
Sure. So my name is Ryan Falvey. I'm managing director here at CFSI, and I'm responsible for managing the Financial Solutions Lab. Prior to joining CFSI, I had a background. I worked in developing markets for a while as a strategy consultant, helping companies develop mobile banking and mobile-enabled financial product solutions in emerging markets. And then I worked for Silicon Valley Bank on a payment strategy team there for a while. And then I came to CFSI to help get the lab up and running, and have kind of overseen it since launch in June of 2014 now. So it's been an exciting couple of years. The lab is, when we were looking at the lab, what we're really trying to do is change how financial services companies are created and supported in this country. You know, our ambition was to help support the creation of products that can serve millions of users. And so I think we were thinking of, like, not necessarily how do we bring completely new ideas to market, but how do we encourage those ideas that are already there to continue growing in a way that that is good for consumers and builds consumer financial health in this country. So the lab was really intended to be creative to the market, and to be supportive of the ecosystem in a way that will can help it to unfold in a way that, you know, how CFSI is hoping it unfolds. What we do each year, I think, that is kind of unique is we identify a specific challenge that consumers are facing. So last year's challenge, and the companies are in your lab this year, was around, you know, household liquidity, which is basically you get paid on a Friday and you have a bill that's due on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. It can be that short. And if you don't have savings, if you don't have access to affordable credit, you really have just a bunch of bad options. And we know this is a huge problem that affects 100 million Americans. They spend about $40 billion a year on imperfect substitutes, the products that aren't designed for liquidity, but are being used to solve that problem. And it ultimately creates a lot of pain for consumers and leads to some pretty poor financial health outcomes over the long term. So by putting that challenge out there and then putting together a program that would allow us to work across stage of company, kind of regardless of tax status, we work with nonprofits and for-profits. We were really looking to try to bring in kind of the best startups, the best founders, the best nonprofit innovators who are working in the space, and then work really intensively with them for about, you know, 9 months to try to help them achieve the goals they face in their businesses. And so it's a pretty customized program. I think we get compared to an accelerator often. And, you know, when we talk to entrepreneurs, you know, we say, you know, there's a Y Combinator, there's 500 startups out there. Those programs are amazing at helping you grow, think about recruiting, hiring, raising money. The lab does not do any of that. What we focus on is kind of the wonky stuff around financial services. And so I think we're best suited for companies that are already doing that really well. And we can bring in that kind of financial services expertise and help them make connections to help them get to the next level.
Wonky, but fascinating and fun.
I think it's fascinating. Yeah.
And, you know, something I should have said at the beginning and that we want to emphasize is that we are doing this now, partly because your second year deadline for entries in the competition is coming up. And that is on April, what date?
April 7th, right around the corner.
April 7th. So we really hope that a lot of people will hear this and share it with their friends who might have a worthy entry, but also enter their own enterprises as well. So I didn't mean to interrupt
absolutely.
You. So go on.
No, that's why we're here. That's absolutely right. I mean, this is a 5-year effort. And so this was, you know, the companies, the founders who are here today, were part of the first program. I think for the most part, we had some really great outcomes from that first year. You know, at a high level, since the companies joined the lab, they raised about $80 million of additional follow-on capital, added well over 100,000 new users. Their teams, on average, doubled in size. We had one acquisition. So I think we're feeling pretty positive about how we can add to the space. And so this year, we're looking for a, kind of a new crop of companies. Our challenge this year is around helping consumers weather financial shocks. And, you know, what we're really looking for is, you know, we know that so there's this short-term liquidity issue that I touched on, which is what we focused on last year. But, you know, this is something that also affects people over the long term. 60% of Americans, you know, experience a financial shock each year. And 55% of Americans don't, you know, say that that shock made it hard for them to make ends meet. There's been analyses that the average financial shock is it can be, you know, several thousand dollars. But the typical households, the typical household's most expensive financial shock costs $2,000. You know, half of Americans would have to rely on borrowing to cover a $600 expense. So few people are really prepared for those bigger shocks that happen in life, and many of them are expectable, and there aren't great tools in place to help people manage them. So you're thinking insurance products or longer term savings products. But then we're looking for also for products that help people kind of expect the unexpected. I mean, you hear this story, you know, I think the classic story of like one of Payday's utilities is, you know, the person's car breaks down, they have no other options, and, you know, they take a payday loan out. Well, apart from that being a pretty small number of people who are using that product, really every car breaks down. Like, that's a completely expectable thing. So we should have products that help people anticipate that, help people save for it and plan for it over the long term. So that's the kind of out-of-the-box thinking I think we're hoping to kind of see this year, the challenge.
Great. I love the lab. It has brought out so much creative thinking, and our regular listeners know that I go so far as to say that I think that the technology innovation underway has the potential to solve all the problems that consumers have in their financial lives other than lack of money itself. And if you think through the things that cause people problems, from their own difficulties in managing their money through the complexity of the system and the rigidity of the traditional system, people are working on every facet of that. And there's no better way to find the innovative ideas than to be able to fund a competition like this. And Ryan, we'll circle back to you at the end too, so you can talk a little bit more about what the winners get. This year there were 9 winners, is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, great. So there's a pool of capital as well as all kinds of other additional help. And in fact, we want to talk with our first-year winners now, really, about some of the things they've been able to get out of the lab. So did you want to say anything else before we turn to Sherry?
No, that's great. That's okay. The best way I can understanding the lab.
Okay, super. All right, well, I'd love to get you joining in here. Again, Sherry Atwood is the founder and CEO of SupportPay. And you have a very interesting and specific solution. And if you would just talk a little bit about, first about yourself and where you got the idea, and then what SupportPay does, and then share with us your experience in being in the lab for a year.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on here. So Sherry Atwood, I'm the founder and CEO of SupportPay, and I'm a child of a divorce. So when you talk about financial hardships or situations that really impact everyday Americans, parents who are no longer together and having to financially manage separate homes while raising children is definitely one of the key areas that face not only Americans, but people throughout the world. And as a child of a divorce, what I found was my parents fought constantly, and it felt like what they fought most about was money and finances. Being raised by a single mom who raised 3 kids on her own without the resources or the dollars or education to really provide for us, I, you know, felt this on an everyday basis. So several years ago, when I faced my own divorce, one of the things that we swore was that we wouldn't fight about the finances, and especially fight about it when it in front of my daughter, so that she wasn't impacted. And what I quickly realized was there's one bill in life that you don't actually get a reminder for, and that's child support. In the United States, there are over 55 million parents that exchange over $200 billion every year in child support and child expenses. Globally, that number is about 300 million parents that exchange over $900 billion. And one of the biggest issues when it comes to the finances is the distrust between the parents. So what I hear consistently from parents is, I have no problem paying. I just want to know that the money is going to my kid. And usually the person doing the purchasing is, you know, they're spending, but the other person isn't the one that, you know, shopping and buying the tennis shoes that cost $100. So I thought about this and thought, well, why can't we provide some sort of data or proof to the parents to be able to demonstrate that the money actually is going to the children, and also then have a platform that does all the billing and all manages all the payments, and then also provides a certified record so that there is a certified recording that payments have been made and money has actually been spent on the kids. And so that's the basis of SupportPay. So SupportPay helps parents who are no longer living together manage child support and share expenses, and it thereby helps with that and reduces the financial impact that separation may have on the family. What we found so far is that parents who are using our platform are 90% more likely to exchange child support than not. So by having the proof and the reminders, they're more likely to exchange child support.
And it
really, really helps, you know, parents, especially, you know, in tough and difficult times, also allowing them to make cash payments to each other. And so have multiple payment options in order to make sure that that money continues to be exchanged and the kids are supported.
I
definitely get that. Usually, you know, I go to a bunch of, especially I'm here based in Silicon Valley, and, you know, people say, so what do you do? What's your startup? And they kind of just, when I tell them, they kind of just like for a second stop and look at, and then they're like, wait, there's nothing out there already? And I'm like, no, yeah. There's not. It's something, you know, so obvious. It impacts so many people, whether it is somebody who's been through this themselves, who's a child of a divorce, or everybody knows somebody who's impacted by, you know, parents no longer being together. So how can we provide financial services and financial technology to really help, you know, families weather these types of financial difficulties?
And tell us a little bit about where your business is today and in the growth curve, and then actually hold off on talking about the experience of the lab, because I want to get Jerry and Clinton in here, and then we'll all talk about that. But give us the snapshot of where you stand with it now.
Yes. So we've raised, to date, we raised over $3 million. We're in the process of raising our Series A right now. We have over 35,000 parents on our platform. So using our platform, we have over 5,000 members of the family law community in our network who are referring support pay to their clients. So whether that's lawyers, mediators, judges, or divorce services. And even just in our short time in the participation with the lab, we started with about 12,000 parents. So we've gone from 12,000 to 35,000 in about 9 months, well as, you know, expanded our partnerships dramatically by leveraging the resources of the lab.
Fantastic. Okay, let me have you stand by for a minute, and let's go to Jerry Nemorin, who is the founder and CEO of Lend Street. Jerry, welcome. Where are you located today?
Hi, Joanne. Thanks for having me. I am actually in Oakland, California.
And where are you, Clinton?
I'm probably about half a block down the street from Jerry as well, so I'm in Oakland also.
And where are you, Ryan?
I'm in San Francisco.
Ryan.
I'm in San Francisco.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So you guys are all on the West Coast. I'm in Boston. It's a very windy day. It's so windy here that we had a gale yesterday, and you may hear roaring in the background. But anyway, so Jerry, tell us about Lend Street.
Yeah. So my name is Jerry Nemorin. I'm the founder and CEO of Lend Street. Prior to Lend Street, I worked on Wall Street in helping companies navigate through the credit crisis back in 2008 through 2010. And it was during my time on Wall Street that, you know, a light bulb went off and realized that the consumers who were struggling with debt, you know, like many of the companies during that time, really didn't have adequate solution to navigate through that cycle themselves. And, you know, the only options that were available were either credit counseling, debt settlement, or bankruptcy. And with credit counseling, you know, it's great. It allows consumers to get some payment relief and allows them to pay off their debt over a period of time. But there's no real principal relief. So those consumers are still paying really high payments in some cases. And you know, in the cases of debt settlement, you know, you look at, you know, these are the guys you hear on the radio call, you know, saying, call me, I'll get you out of debt for 50 cents on the dollar, or 30 or 40 cents on the dollar. And many of them, you know, the requirement is that you go delinquent in your credit the cards, enroll into those programs, pay a monthly payment into an escrow account, and eventually save enough money to go out and settle your debt. During that time, obviously you're delinquent, your credit score is ruined, and there's no real mechanism to rebuild your credit score. Lastly, bankruptcy is probably the first thing anyone who is struggling with debt, think about, because it's the most obvious or it's the most promoted solution. But it's one solution that isn't the optimal, has significant long-term permanent impact. It impacts where you possibly could work. It impacts where you could live. And it's the one question that you often get on any application that you complete, right? It's, have you ever filed for bankruptcy? So that permanent scarlet letter, and for many people, they're actually doing a restructuring. By that, I mean their creditors will negotiate a settlement. They'll negotiate for a lower amount and allow them to pay that amount over a period of time. So what we're doing at Lend Street is recognizing that, consumers who have a significant portion of their income going to paying off debt. I mean, we're seeing 60 to 80% of people's income that are going to pay off debt. And it's obviously that's not sustainable. That's having a significant impact on the family lives. And so what we're doing is, instead of having them in a debt settlement program where they're lasting over 48 months, 60 months, and being delinquent and their credit score is ruined, we're partnering with some debt settlement companies, and we're working with consumers directly to help them negotiate a settlement, and we'll fund the settlement right away. So we require the consumer to enroll in a settlement program, pay for a few months to prove that they have the capacity and the willingness to pay. And once that's proven, we come in, we fund the entire settlement, and then they're paying on a loan. And that allows them to effectively restructure their debt, get a lower debt, lower payments, and a lower interest rate. That gives them the path to rebuilding, to get out of debt and quickly rebuild their credit score. To date, we're seeing our customers' credit scores jumping up by 100 points after a year in the program.
Right.
We're helping them save 20 to 25% on their debt. We're reducing their payments by 25 to 30%. And so a lot of our customers are coming in because they experience a shock. As Ryan mentioned earlier, there's 55% of U.S. households who are struggling financially and are only a shock away. And a large part of that is because they have a significant amount of debt and significant payments that are going towards paying off those debt. And so by helping the consumer restructure their debt, we help them get a lower principal, lower payment, which they can use to now increase their savings or live a better life and really focus on the moments that matter the most.
Yeah. I want to get Clinton in here in a minute, but tell us where you are in your growth curve.
Yeah, so we've raised a little over $3 million to date. We recently signed an agreement for a $28 million line of credit to fund loans through the site. We've done over $1 million in loans, and we're now ramping up that portfolio and starting when we entered the lab, we actually sort of shut down or lending altogether to focus on building the infrastructure and building out the team to scale the platform. We had done a pilot and proven out the impact of our structure. We proved out the demand for the product, and we were at that point we had just engaged an institutional investor to fund the loans on the site and had received a term sheet. And so we wanted to make sure our system could take in the volume So we really focus on building out the platform. We just launched the new platform in January and started lending again, and we're seeing quite a bit of demand, and we're getting ready to do more of a bigger campaign in the states we currently operate, and we're in the middle of negotiating a term sheet with a partner to take us national.
Fantastic. Thank you. All right, let me turn to Quentin. Quentin Farmer is co-founder at Even. And Quentin, tell us about yourself and Even.
All right, thanks, John. Yeah, so I guess I'll start with talking a little bit about what Even is, and then I'll talk about our background as a team and how we arrived at this, because I think those last two things are especially relevant to the lab, right, and why we're here today. I'm one of the co-founders of Even. Our product provides income stability for low and moderate income Americans, especially folks that work in hourly jobs. So you can imagine retail, food service as a couple of examples. It even works by saving money when income is high and boosting paychecks when income is low, right? So imagine those fluctuations in an hourly paycheck. A good example of why this is important, if you think back a few months ago, when the major snowstorms hit the East Coast, a lot of our members weren't able to work for 2 or 3 days, right? You'd have transit shut down, stores were shut down, you know, people weren't able to get to work even if they had shifts scheduled. And without Even, 3 days without work would have meant a catastrophically low paycheck. This would have been one of those shocks that Ryan mentioned earlier on the show. And so instead, you know, our members, instead of that really bad, a low paycheck, they would have received a paycheck boost from Even, which meant they were able to cover their expenses without needing to miss a bill or use a payday loan. And so those boosts, that would have either been covered by existing savings that they held with Even, or the boost would have been repaid from future high paychecks. And so, you know, again, when you're thinking about the alternatives, you know, Ryan mentioned earlier, when that happens, when that income shock happens, there's just not a lot of options for people, especially folks that aren't using Even. Even distributes to the individuals we serve by partnering with employers who offer our product as a benefit. And so that's what we're spending most of our time focusing on right now, is developing those partnerships, working closely with employers who understand why Even is important to the people that work for them. So we have a couple different partners that we're ramping up now. Unfortunately, I can't yet talk about those on this podcast, but if you have me back in 6 months, we can talk a little bit more about that.
Okay,
and so,
great.
And going back to our team and kind of how we arrived at this, right, when I think of the early, the co-founders of Even, the first employees, we're kind of a traditional Silicon Valley company, right? Ryan, my co-founder, was one of the very first engineers at Instagram. Before I started working on Even, I was studying computer science at Columbia. And before that, I was riding an old motorcycle around the country. So we didn't exactly have a lot of exposure to financial services, right? But we did know that we wanted to work on this income volatility problem. This is something that I'd experienced firsthand when I was growing up, either with my mom when she was raising 3 boys and a single mom and, trying to make that work. In my own life, working my way through college as a bartender and a landscaper and kind of all the different jobs that you string together to make things work. And then actually some of our very earliest customers at Even were my siblings. My sister is working her way through school, working at Chick-fil-A right now. And she was able to use Even to save money, set money aside, especially for the times that she was busy and wasn't able to work. And so, I think, and I know we'll talk a little bit more about the lab as we get further into the conversation, but just as a team, what we knew very early on was, we knew product design, we knew engineering, but we didn't necessarily have access to the financial services community. And that was something that we felt we really needed to solve going into starting this company.
Fantastic. I love the diversity of these problems and solutions. And they do all cluster around the same kinds of issues, the same kinds of consumers, but such creative thinking about how to go after them. So let me ask all of you to just talk about the experience being in the labs. A year ago, you were all applying for the competition, and we should talk a little bit about the funding that comes with becoming selected to be a winner, and then also the other kinds of support you got, and what's been most valuable, what's been most interesting about it. open that to anybody.
Yeah, so I'll start. You know, I guess going back to this kind of where we were when we went into the lab when we were applying, you know, we'd raised seed funding. We'd raised $1.5 million at that time. And we had just started to get, you know, our product into a really early beta. But there were all these questions that we had unanswered, right? There were questions around distribution, around, you know, how to partner with regulators, you know, who we should be reaching out to maybe in the nonprofit community. And so in some of my first conversations with Ryan, these were a lot of the questions I asked. And, you know, if I remember correctly, his attitude was sort of, yes, exactly. Like, we know you need all those things. Like, come here and we'll help you with them. And so, you know, in that early process, you know, just knowing that we were going to have this place that we could go, you know, this partner to help us understand this new landscape was extremely valuable to me.
Ryan, do you want to talk a little bit about, Sherry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to second that and say, you know, obviously the capital infusion that we got through winning the lab has definitely been helpful, but the most helpful for our team as well is just understanding the fintech community and all the complexity, compliance. You know, I never knew what MSB stands for, never knew how, you know, important it was to be or not be a money services broker. And just having those connections, as well as just the huge amount of people that we've been able to network with and connect with across for-profit and nonprofit sectors, and people in the fintech community who just seem so excited to just want to help and, you know, make, you know, everyday Americans' lives easier and better. So that, I think, has been the most valuable for us.
I think me and Sherry in that first meeting in Austin felt like little kids as we were sitting there, like, scribbling notes furiously. I think it was, like, maybe, you know, a couple of the different partners that CFSI had brought in teaching us quite a bit, so.
And that was that at the Emerge conference last year?
Yes.
Or before that?
Yes.
That was there?
No, at the Emerge
Everyone should plan to come to the CFSI Emerge conference in June. It's going to be amazingly wonderful. As always. Maybe Ryan, why don't you talk a little bit about what the winners do get access to above and beyond the capital?
Yeah, so I mean, with each company receives, you know, $250,000 for, you know, not-for-profit, it's obviously a grant. The for-profits, it's a pretty, you know, permissive convertible note. It has, you know, in kind of Silicon Valley parlance, it's about as founder-friendly as it gets. Has no cap, no discount. So it kind of effectively serves as a very low-cost money until the next round. The reason we went with that structure was that, you know, we wanted to be able to work across stage, and the early-stage startups are all kind of at different places, and you know, it's difficult to kind of find ways to provide capital across the spectrum without kind of compromising on how the money gets out. And since that's not really the main objective of the lab, we tried to kind of make it as helpful for the companies as possible. We didn't go to a grant mechanism for the startups, partly because of the signaling effect. And I think, you know, if you obviously, you know, all three of the companies, you know, featured today, and I think, you know, for the companies writ large, you know, they're all building businesses, and businesses in a very expensive and very complicated market, which is, you know, the U.S. financial services industry. And so I think we knew very early on that $250,000 is probably not going to, you know, make or break it for any of these firms. Or frankly, even if we had, you know, put all of the, you know, the entire lab budget into one company, it probably might not be enough to get them to, you know, millions of users. It's just a very complicated market. And so what we're really trying to do is signal to kind of the best entrepreneurs, we were committing to them as investors, and we saw this as kind of a long-term relationship. And it helps us to kind of sort through, like, who's really serious about building consumer financial health, and, you know, who's kind of looking for, like, a short-term cash infusion. And I think that goes to kind of really what we focus on, and quite frankly, where I think our biggest value add is, as Quentin and Sherry indicated, you know, really trying to understand the financial services industry and know who the players are, and be in a better position to strike some of the partnerships that, you know, we might be able to facilitate, or just, you know, frankly, I think that, you know, all the founders we've worked with are kind of able to facilitate their own partnerships, but it's useful to be able to get some of the background, to get the support, to be able to call on some of our partners who are literally the true experts in the space to get feedback. So I remember, you know, Sherry and Quentin and I at that first meeting, I would love to say, take credit, like somehow we were helping them, but it was really, I think, Adam Shapiro Promontory, who's, you know, probably one of the smarter people, certainly in fintech, maybe in the United States, on some of these issues. And so, you know, he's having access to somebody like that who's kind of listening to what you're doing and able to say, okay, this is how I would approach that. Let me even just kind of framing up issues and then being able to take it to the next step is really valuable. And especially in a relatively condensed time frame without having to kind of sort through an organization. I think where we really focus on is helping companies understand their issues, figure out who they should talk to, getting those conversations facilitated, and then, you know, helping to move them along. And I also think, frankly, like, I think there's a degree of kind of reputational benefit that many of these firms get from being associated with CFSI. I mean, we're the authority on what a quality product is. And so, you know, I think that, you know, we're kind of putting a reputation on the line a little bit to kind of advance the space. And I think so far we've been pretty pleased with the results.
Yeah, I agree. I know that you had a tremendous pool of applicants last year. And so the ones who were selected really had to shine through. And as you're saying, I think it's really important that they get access to really top-notch consulting advice and legal advice, people who are willing to work with these startups and with CFSI to help people, you know, get on the track, and including, as you say, understanding the regulatory issues, which are so complex in fintech. Jerry, I want to get you back in here what you found most useful about the lab, or anything that may have surprised you about it, about the experience.
Yeah, you know, I think you know, Quentin and Sherry said it best. I mean, I think not only from a regulatory perspective, we had some of the best minds around the table, and given the regulatory intensive nature of, you know, fintech, that's always, you know, for a startup, it's a gold mine, right? I mean, it's, you know, especially lacking resources to really engage that type of expert to really opine on your business model, to opine on the landscape, and to help navigate you through the regulatory process and provide a framework that makes sense for your company, especially at the stage that you're in. So that was incredibly valuable. The other thing I think that was incredibly valuable is having access to some of the executives at J.P. Morgan to get their feedback, their insight into the model, into, you know, your business model, the approach you're taking, some of the things that they've seen, being able to help guide. And I think that's invaluable. Given their experience in, you know, sitting at the largest bank in the U.S. And being, you know, seeing, you know, I think they bank nearly a little bit over half, if not, you know, the American households. And so having those conversations to get some insights, to understand how your solution could be better designed to solve the problem that you're trying to solve, I think is priceless.
That's fantastic. Speaking of regulators, I always ask my guests if you have any thoughts for the regulators. We have many regulators who are listeners and have told me they always appreciate me asking this question. They've got a tough job. Do any of you want to offer any thoughts on how the regulatory landscape is going to or should adapt to the fintech challenges that we're in the midst of? You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but if you have any thoughts, I'd welcome them.
Well, for me, yeah, I think, I... and for, sorry, for one, especially as a startup, one of the biggest issues that we run into is in the beginning, we're still trying to narrow down and finalize what our business model is. How, you know, for us, we're moving a massive amount of money. On average, right now, we're seeing about $1,300 a month being exchanged between parents. Child support and finances are and expenses are usually about 25% of a parent's income. But in the beginning, you kind of don't know what you don't know, and we're still sort of playing around. And right now, with the current regulatory framework, there's no give or flexibility in the beginning to kind of, you know, change your business model or, you know, test different things out without falling into the regulatory requirements. So if there was a way to, you know, have some sort of sandbox or some sort of dollar amount mm-hmm. from a company perspective to let a lot more of these, you know, fintech startups, you know, kind of get their feet wet before having to really worry about, you know, getting into the regulatory requirements, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, that's a great point. And several of the federal regulators are actively looking at this question of having more of a regulatory sandbox, and the CFPB already has a sort of a version of that in the Catalyst program. So that is really helpful. Anybody else? We did a podcast on the sandbox concept also a while back. Nitish Pandey was our guest on it. Anybody else got thoughts on the regulatory front?
Yeah, I think just as a minor addition to what Sherry just said, you know, I think for the earliest stage companies, you know, in the absence of a relationship with somebody like a CFSI, just how to reach out, you know, the right channels and the right ways to engage, that's often fairly tough to figure out. You know, I think Catalyst is a good example of kind of, you know, the first step in solving that fear and that kind of, you know, how do I get started kind of concern. And I think of the meeting that we had in D.C. with a large group of regulators and the lab companies, right? And to me, that was a really unique experience because there's this kind of equal footing in the room, right? There's nine companies there all kind of presenting their stories, their frustrations, you know, things that they've struggled with. And the regulators are there listening and giving their own versions of that. You know, what are they struggling with? What are they, you know, working on and thinking about themselves? And so finding more opportunities for those very two-way dialogues to happen, you know, I think does start to surface ideas like the sandbox, right, and other kind of similar things that, you know, should be looked at and should be considered as options.
Yeah, I was at that meeting, and I had a lot of feedback from regulators who were there that they found it incredibly helpful to listen to you all speak, the nine winners, and talk about how hard it is as a company that's trying to Your companies are all aiming toward achieving goals that the regulators put a high priority on, so, you know, higher consumer protection, higher financial inclusion. And so it's really worthwhile, I think, for them to hear what the regulatory hurdles are. Sometimes there's always good reasons why they're there, but nevertheless, a lot of that needs to be rethought, I think, today. Anybody else? I know we're going to run out of time in a minute. Anybody want to add anything before we turn to Ryan to tell us about the new contest?
Yeah, Joanne, I would say from the regulatory front, you know, obviously it's the hardest, you know, fintech and probably healthcare are the two hardest places to really innovate. And so, you know, I would echo the sandbox is definitely a much needed solution. And I think, you know, in some ways, the new no action letter that the CFPB has launched, that program can be incredibly helpful as well. Mm-hmm. You know, but but again, a lot of startups at our stage, we're a little further along now, but at the early stages, you know, don't know the regulatory framework. Don't, you know, so you can, you know, and the difference with any other startup, any other industry, is that in the fintech space, you know, one mistake could not only kill your company, but could also turn you into a felon, right? And so, mm-hmm. and so I think creating somewhere, whether it be a framework for a company that, or an entrepreneur who's thinking about building a company, they can go in and say, I'm thinking about doing a lending startup, and it's going to market to this segment and do this and do that. And maybe it spits out all of the regulatory aspects that need to be considered or something of that nature. I think the CFPB or one of the regulatory bodies should put something like that together, because a lot of us, starting off, we don't really know what all the regulatory requirements for that particular sector or for what we're doing. But we're thinking solution. We're solution oriented. We're thinking, how do we create the solution and how do we impact the consumers that we're building the solution for? So I think that something like that would be incredibly helpful.
That's great.
And Joanne,
Just
to add on that, I think there, there's a flip side to this too. And I think one thing that we the reason I think CFSI is doing this project, frankly, is partly to also educate the rest of the market. And that's not just regulators, but it's also bankers and executives and larger technology firms, that of this, the degree of innovation that's happening and some of the limitations that these companies are facing. In many cases, I know I saw this in my previous role before I came to CFSI. There's often, I think, even a perception of risk that is limiting innovation more than actual risk. And I think that that's, one of the things, Quentin mentioned that conversation we had with the regulatory agencies in Washington in December. Certainly, I know we get a ton of inquiries from other CFSI network members to meet the companies and to hear what they're doing. There's a tremendous amount of interest and demand to kind of see more of the innovation, understand why it's happening and what it means. And I think that hopefully by facilitating these types of conversations, the two-way conversation, we can open up the door a little bit wider for these companies to test things out. Because I think what is interesting is, frankly, is it's often they're not really doing anything that's risky or that even novel from a regulatory perspective, but partly just because of the design innovations or their ways of reaching consumers, or in some cases just the friendly dynamic that they've been able to develop with their customers, where they're maybe mm-hmm. texting or calling or just talking to them more frequently, I think it makes people think there's more there than there necessarily is. And so I think we spend a lot of time just saying, hey, this is actually what this product does. This is the risk here is pretty limited. And I think once people kind of get past it, they're like, yeah, we should see more of this type of innovation. This does seem to be good for consumers.
Yeah, I love that point. That meeting in December was striking to me because all the innovators, all the male ones, were suits and ties, and I had never seen any of them in a suit and tie before. But they came to Washington.
I think I had to buy a suit and tie to go over there. So
I'm not going to take a poll on who's wearing a suit at this moment, but it's a culture shift that we've got two different cultures here that need to come together, understand each other, learn about each other. Both sides are going to get so much out of that, and I think it's really underway. We're actually recording this one day after the Comptroller of the Currency released their white paper on financial responsible innovation and fintech, which they happened to do yesterday here at Harvard University, where I am a senior fellow, and we had the opportunity to host the controller, Tom Curry, and Amy Friend, the general counsel, and they spoke at two very, very interesting programs and really have embarked on a commitment to deeply understanding fintech toward balancing their regulatory thinking so that they don't just reflexively think about risk and ignore potential benefits in things, and trying to figure out how to become more nimble. And it's a big step, and of the other agencies are moving in similar directions. And so I'm very optimistic that we're on a great path toward more mutual understanding and cross-pollinization. It's interesting of you, this group here, some of you have financial backgrounds and some don't. And we found that way all through the Barefoot Innovation podcast programs. And I think the guests have like split practically 50-50. Some of them are people who not only don't have banking backgrounds, but got into their field because they really wanted to do better than whatever problem they were having with their bank. And then others have been lifelong bankers. And the innovation can come everywhere, but it has to move in an ecosystem shift that includes the regulatory and policy making, even the legislative components as well. And I think we're on a roll with it. So I'm so excited that you've been able to join me today. I wish we had more time. I know you're all about to run out of time. So let me finish by asking each of you first, and we'll definitely be putting this in the show notes, which are jsbarefoot.com. But let's go down the list and have each of you tell the audience where they can reach you, starting with you, Sherry, if they want information on SupportPay.
Yeah, you can reach us at supportpay.com or on Twitter, we're SupportPay app, or Facebook is facebook.com/supportpay.
Okay, super. And Jerry?
Yeah, you can reach us at lendstreet.com, lendstreet.com. Or reach out via Twitter at Lynn Street or at Jay Namorin.
Great. And Clinton?
Yeah, so you can find us at even.com, and you can email me directly, Clinton@teameven.com.
Super. And then, Ryan, let's let you just wrap it up, how to reach CFSI and how to apply to the lab, and reminding people of the deadline and getting everybody getting their applications in.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Joanne, for letting us come on here. This is great. It's really helpful, I think, for people who are thinking about the lab to be able to kind of hear from the companies we work with directly to learn more about how we work. Our challenge this year is currently live, and we're going to close the application on April 7th. You can find it at financialsolutionslab.com. Find a link there and can learn more about what we're focused on this year, which is, you know, I touched on at the top of the show, helping consumers weather financial shocks. We really try to be as inclusive as possible in this. And I'll say, if you are thinking about applying, when you think you're in the space, you should apply, regardless of where you are in stage. And we use the application both to select the companies we work with, obviously, but also to help us get a landscape and understand what's happening in fintech in a given year. There were a number of firms that applied last year that CFSI has subsequently found other ways to work with. When our team is doing research or consulting and looking for kind of examples, or often trying to uncover new innovations, they're dipping into the applications to kind of see, you know, who's out there, who might be in this space, and who should be paying attention to. So I think it's a pretty valuable way to put your business on the radar of us and influencers like yourself, Joanne. And then also, this year we're also expanding what we're trying to help companies with. So we've partnered with a number of accelerators around the country, Village Capital, which works with kind of social entrepreneurs who are active in this space. It's a program that Jerry went through at Glen Street early in his life cycle. They do a great job. TechStars, which is an accelerator that they do with Barclays. 500 Startups is now working in fintech. And Fast Forward, which is a nonprofit accelerator based out here in San Francisco. So with all those organizations, we've kind of committed to helping them source companies and identify, interesting stuff out there. So if you are in a space, you should definitely apply. If you want to learn more about CFSI, check out our website, cfsinnovation.com. You can find CFSI on Twitter as well at the same handle. And I am on Twitter, although far less exciting than the other people on this program at Ryan.
Your tweets are great. I love your tweets. Everyone should follow you.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that, Joanne.
Anything else?
No, just apply.
Exactly. I'll tell the audience that we didn't get the idea to do this until the last minute. So unfortunately, it's going to post very shortly before the deadline. So we hope everybody will hurry in and also keep the whole thing in mind again for next year. But meanwhile, I want to thank you all for being my guest today on Barefoot Innovation. I will tell you, you make me proud to be a board member of CFSI. I'm very excited about what you're doing, and I wish you all the very, very best. So thanks for joining me.
Great. Thank you. It's been great. Thanks, Joanne.
Joanne, thanks for having us.
I hope you've enjoyed our session with some of the startups from the CFSI Financial Solutions Lab competition for the past year. Again, this year's contest will focus on solution for consumers facing disruptive events in their financial lives, and the deadline is April 7, 2016. So go to CFSI's website and come to mine at jsbarefoot.com for our show notes. Also, our video series is underway with our first briefing now online. One thing I have learned about fintech is that it is more tech than fin. That fact throws off a lot of people in the financial world because the change is coming more from the technology realm than from finance, which makes people underestimate the speed and magnitude of the change underway. So the first video starts with the technology. I explain the five huge technology trends that are driving disruption and are converging on financial providers and consumers. So please sign up. Remember, we have group pricing, so contact us if you have a team that wants to follow the series. Come to www.regulationinnovation and sign up. Also, when you come there, you will find we have a little bonus video for your amusement in which I bring you into my own kitchen and illustrate breakthrough innovation in a couple of moments with the help of, yes, my selfie toaster. Meanwhile, subscribe to the Barefoot Innovation Podcast by email so you never miss any, and please leave a review on iTunes. Coming up are Simples, Josh Rich, 1 year later, Raul Vasquez of Opportune, John Stein of Betterment, Blythe Masters speaking about Bitcoin, and much, much more. So please join us.